Hound Dogs. I'm David Hankins.
And I'm Paul Hankins.
And welcome to On the Air with Power Squared. This week we're doing something that we've never done before.
Yes. We're going to go back to the year 2000, so 21 years ago.
Right.
And we're going to talk about a book called House of Leaves by Mark Z. Danielewski.
Okay. And this is a book that you've read. I have not. So
yes.
It's going to be a very one-sided show. Before you get started, tell us what attracted you to House of Leaves.
Okay, so on Trophy Unlocked, we've been... It's related. On Trophy Unlocked, we've been doing a series of reviews of games that are considered walking simulators. And one of them was The Beginner's Guide by Davey Reedon, who also created The Stanley Parable, which is my favorite in that genre.
Okay.
Stanley Parable is. So with The Beginner's Guide... While I was doing research for the review of that, I came across a comparison to the books House of Leaves and Pale Fire. So I looked up both of them, and House of Leaves seemed more intriguing of the two. Because I was attracted to the idea of, like, a book with weird formatting. It's like, that could be an interesting read. And so... I guess as a gift.
Yeah, it's a Christmas gift.
Yeah.
What a great
father.
I got
the remastered full color edition hardcover.
Right.
So then it took me about like a month to read the book because I was reading it like an hour at a time. And it was, I think, a little overhyped.
Okay.
For what it is.
Well, why don't you... tell us about
the book. Okay, so to kind of understand the book, you have to understand there are multiple narrators and layers to the book. To explain the layers, there's the outermost layer, which is you, the reader, reading a manuscript that was... put together by Johnny Truant and edited by a group of editors who looked at it, and that manuscript is based on the writings of an old man named Zampano,
okay,
who is describing a and academically discussing a movie, so that's the innermost layer, called The Navidson Record, which is about a house on Ashtree Lane. I forget which state it is. It's in the review I wrote. And there the supernatural occurrences in the house.
Why was the film... worthy of discussion, I guess. Or in the book, how they say it, why.
Right. I'm not 100% sure why Zampano decided to talk about it. It's presented in universe as this movie that had this great big release, and everyone saw it and talked about it.
Okay.
So I guess it was his take on the movie. Now, the... interesting twist about the whole thing is that Zampano is blind. So there is the question throughout the book of whether or not the Navidson Record itself actually existed.
Okay.
Because Johnny Truant also can't find any trace of the movie.
Oh, okay. So it's a book about a movie that maybe didn't exist.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we know it didn't exist.
Well, it's a book about a book about a movie.
All right.
It's actually... Now, that's where later...
It's fine.
Different layers or the fonts come in. There are multiple fonts. Johnny Truant is in Courier. Zampano is in Times. The editors are in Bookman.
Okay.
And a fourth character, Pelafina, who comes into play in the appendices, is in Dante.
Who's this?
She is Johnny Truant's mother, who was committed to an insane asylum.
And how does that relate to the book?
Good question.
Okay. All right. So, walk us through it.
Okay, so it's actually not too hard to follow the book. Again, the thing that attracted me to it was the weird formatting. Is you have normal pages. Well, normal, yeah. I guess. Or it's formatted normally like this.
Okay.
Just trying to make sure I can be heard.
Right. And it's, if you're listening to this, it looks just like a normal book.
Yeah. But then you have stuff. I'm trying to
flip around. Flipping through the pages.
It looks like this.
And what were we watching? What were we looking at here?
We are looking at pages where the text is correct, upside down, or to the side, or it's printed mirrored, or there's squares with other text in it. It's actually, if you look at it, it's also mirrored on the opposite side.
Okay.
And then there's also times where it's kind of shaped like what's happening.
Right.
Like, got this stuff at the bottom of the page.
It's pretty much a blank page, which is some writing at the bottom.
Yeah. See. Or it's like
one or two words.
Yeah. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that part of the book was interesting, but, what kept me going through the book was the actual Navidson record itself.
Okay.
Or at least what Zampano describes as in the Navidson record. Because, that is a, that storyline is very intriguing. It has, it's the most, I guess you could say standardly written. In the sense that it has a beginning, middle, and clear beginning, middle, and end. A lot of interesting twists and supernatural phenomena, like the thing about the house is that Navidson is trying to make a documentary about his family.
Okay.
Because he moved to the house to reconnect. However, he discovers that the inside of the house is exactly a quarter of an inch bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
Which we all know is impossible.
Yes.
Except.
And then the house keeps getting impossibly larger, and there is a hidden entire labyrinth.
Okay.
With ashen black walls, and there are multiple expeditions into it to try to figure out the secret behind it, and interestingly, it's on kind of also on the cover. In the right light, you can see there is a spiral staircase, because they, in the labyrinth, which is also around it, they find a spiral staircase that impossibly changes size.
Sounds like a little Harry Potter in there.
Yeah. And it actually plays with perception of space, because for some people, the labyrinth doesn't take that long to traverse, whereas for other people, it takes days.
Hmm.
So it's mind screwy.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So anyway, the horror aspect of the book comes from these from how they can't figure out exactly how the house works. Like they eventually get some kind of idea, but the rules aren't 100% for them. They are for Zampano, of course, because he is observing the movie.
A blind guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
The finished movie. But then, without going into spoilers, towards the end, it actually has a good payoff, I would say. And that's in the last couple chapters of the actual Navidson record. You could actually go back and interpret the whole thing as a love story centered on Navidson's wife.
Okay. Yeah, I in reading about the book, I'd read that there was at some signing somebody came up to him and said, "I thought it was a love story." He goes, "That's what I meant it to be."
Yeah. So I would consider a horror love story.
Okay.
Because Will Navidson is the main character throughout most of the Navidson record. But his, interestingly, his wife and children don't show up that much. but his wife's love for him leads to a good finale.
Okay.
Again, without spoiling exactly what happens.
So that is the movie that they're talking about?
Yes, the Navidson record.
Okay, so I take it Zampano, if I'm pronouncing his name right,
yeah,
puts in a kind of a long synopsis of, or tells you what's going on in the movie pretty much from beginning to end.
Yeah, he goes in a basically very in-depth synopsis telling you more or less exactly what happens. He even calls out shots. Like there's a, Navidson has a medium shot of this happening, or,
wow. Okay.
And then Zampano also goes on, very lengthy academic, discussions about exact aspects of the movie. Like, and that can get bloated at times. Like, for example, before he actually talks about what happens next in the story, he goes on this almost entire, like, half a chapter to a whole chapter about the word echo,
mm-hmm,
and stuff surrounding the word echo, which could get kind of, like, get on with it.
It gets tedious, I assume?
Yeah. The academic discussions can get tedious, and I was an English major, so I should know.
Yeah, that's nothing. That kind of takes away from the learning aspect. Like, it's too in the weeds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, I studied creative writing, but I already got too much of the academic discourse.
So, you're basically reading, it sounds to me like it's a sort of a documentation of the movie.
Yeah.
Which is kind of instead of there. So, is this supposed to be a movie that was modern, or was it like a classic, or was it a foreign film, or?
It was current at the time. It got a wide theatrical release by Miramax, and apparently even got a DVD release.
Okay.
With extra content, which Zampano also talks about.
I assume Zampano wasn't blind when he first saw it. You don't know?
Okay. We don't know. That doesn't get answered. There's also a lot of footnotes in the book.
Yes.
Lots and lots of footnotes.
Is that from Truant or is that?
Truant and Zampano.
Okay.
Let's see. Zampano sometimes uses the footnotes to further explain things. And that can make the discussions even longer.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is also where the other narrator, Johnny Truant, comes in. He talks mostly in the footnotes.
Okay.
And he can go on really, really long, I'm talking like 5 or 10 page tangents just in the footnotes about whatever is going on in his life. And it's interesting at first because there are some parallels to the book.
All right.
And he actually reveals kind of early on that he altered some of Zampano's texts just so he could relate it to his own life.
Okay.
And that was the most interesting payoff of his early tangents. But eventually, I kind of gave up on reading Johnny Truant, because okay, he goes on stuff about like sex and drugs.
Right.
And there's only so much of that you can take.
Okay. So now I understand too that it gives you the option to not read his stuff.
Yeah. That's
so you just read the fonts that are going for Zampano?
Yeah, so I actually use Johnny Truant's own words as a justification to skip him. He actually says, "The way I figure it, if there's something you find irksome, go ahead and skip it."
Okay.
I found him irksome, so I skipped him.
Okay. But you were still able to get something out of the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
I focused more on the Navidson record part, and I had a really good time.
Okay.
I had to get past all the Zampano stuff, though, still, and I still occasionally read some of Johnny Truant's footnotes when they felt relevant, like when he explained why parts of the book were formatted the way they were, or just giving very specific insights.
So was the footnoting Zampano's book, or was it Truant's writing about Zampano's book?
Both.
Okay.
Zampano himself put in some footnotes. There are also times where it's stuff that Zampano wrote in the margins and Johnny Truant just converted them to footnotes, or they were written on index cards separate from certain pages, so he stuck them in there. And then Johnny Truant also inserted his own footnotes on top of that. And then occasionally the editors come in and say, explain things that Johnny Truant can't.
But I mean, aren't there there are pages you were showing us where there's just a little bit of writing at the bottom, or there's one or two words.
Yeah.
And there was some passage where it was like talking about a ladder or climbing something that sort of looks like a ladder. Am I making that up?
Well, in that case, there are also, well, for that, there are parts of the book where you have to turn it in order to effectively read it. For example, here, read like.
So it's sort of written.
Yeah, for this.
Across the page.
Normally, but for this.
Diagonally.
Yeah, you gotta turn it diagonal, and then you can read it.
So, but is that Truant's work, or is that Zampano's?
That's the thing. I want to say. The editor, I think I forgot exactly when this was said, but I guess the editors weren't sure who put in the weird formatting. And okay. Pellafina's letters at the back can have really odd formatting, so it implies that Johnny Truant was the one responsible for the weird formatting.
Okay. All right. Just curious.
But anyway.
So I know that you're like me. You're working on a book.
Yes.
That you eventually want to sell.
Yeah.
Have an agent. And I know that as a first-time writer, you're told, you know, you can't even pick out the cover. This guy was allowed to do the typesetting.
Yeah.
Which is pretty extraordinary.
Yeah.
I would think. Do you have any idea how he was, you know? I know. I read that he only trusted himself to do it, which just seems a little Mr. Wonderful, but
right. So, from my understanding, the way the book got printed was his sister Poe, or goes by the name Poe in any case, had a friend in publishing, and she showed the book to them. So that person must have really believed in Daniel Lipsky's vision,
right?
So something must have happened at that point.
Right. I mean, it's pretty incredible. Was this a bestseller? Which means it sold like 10,000 copies. that would be a bestseller hardback.
My understanding, it was a best-selling debut novel.
Right.
It was actually also published incomplete on the internet first. I don't know exactly how he made the leap from internet to publishing, but apparently it happens more often than we think it does.
Okay, because I always got the impression that if you self-publish it, then no one's going to want to publish it.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Okay.
I'm not completely familiar with that aspect of publishing.
Okay, well, we're just sort of talking at this point. All right. Anything else you want to?
Yeah. Interesting thing about the book is I felt like there were some red herrings put in there to, I guess, send readers on kind of a wild goose chase to try and solve the book. For example, on page 97, there is a check mark in the corner of the page.
Right.
That seems, yes, that seems random until, if you're braver than me, you read a letter from Pelafina on page 609, where she says, for now, all you need to do is place in your next letter a check mark in the lower right-hand corner. That way, I'll know you received this letter. And so that's all, that also, for some people, puts the nature of the entire book into question. But I didn't want to deal with that. Because I think I'm not really sure how much trying to solve the book adds to it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, something I forgot to mention about the formatting. The word house is always in blue. So it's like, it's apparently analogous to chroma key, like this background behind us, if you're watching. And people are able, people can project themselves onto, people project themselves onto the house or something like that.
Okay.
And also the word minotaur and everything about that is crossed out and in red.
Right. It's like you're editing a document in Word.
Yeah. That editing choice, that formatting choice is explained as Zampano trying to erase an entire aspect of the book, but Johnny Truant himself restored that part of the book. Why can't I find it right now?
Isn't there, isn't the word house also slightly up?
Yes, it is also, occasionally it is printed very off slightly. Like, for example, slightly up or slightly down. Like in, so like if it's part of a word like crack house.
Right.
You might see it printed very slightly off.
Didn't you find some like German?
Oh yeah, here's a.
Wow, whole passage marked out in red.
Here's an example. And this also relates to the wild goose chase bit because, as you can see, this is shaped like a key.
Oh, look at that.
And then later, you will find, you will also find where it is shaped like a lock. So that could be interpreted as if you, as being able to solve the book if you can figure out the exact nature of the Minotaur.
Okay.
I am not going to find, I can't find the lock.
That's fine.
Off the top of my head.
So is the Minotaur related to her red herring?
The Minotaur is implied to be the presence of the house that they encounter in the labyrinth.
Ah.
I thought the Minotaur aspect of the book was, the Minotaur aspect of the, yeah, of the book was interesting. Especially insofar as it related to the actual Navidson record, because even though we never get to actually see it, it has a haunting presence.
Okay.
Also, to go back to what you mentioned, I did find, through some research, a genuine error in the book. So the word house is always in blue, even if it's in another language. However, on page 122, in this footnote that is a really long list of architectures, the word is a Dutch word. I'm going to probably butcher it. Schiepvartius? Varthuis?
Sounds good to me.
Varthuis. Yeah, you'll be able to tell me if I got it wrong. But it is not only misspelled slightly, but the part of the word that means house is not in blue. In my review that will go up tomorrow,
right,
at the time of this recording, I point that out with an image.
Okay. I will have a link to the review on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In the appendices, you also learn that some of the footnote symbols are ground air emergency code symbols.
Oh.
Which can relate to what's happening, and I found that a little interesting, but at the same time, that can lead readers towards making connections that probably aren't there.
Which was probably the intent of the...
Yeah. And of course, I'll just say something I personally didn't like when researching the book is whenever there was like legitimate criticism of the book, there was always someone who would quote this first thing where it says, "This is not for you."
Okay. So if you didn't understand it, it's not for you.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Which is pretentious to me, but I digress.
Okay. So you mentioned his sister.
Yeah.
Poe.
Yes.
She also supposedly recorded an album.
Yes.
That is sort of fed by the book or something like that. I mean, there's titles of the songs that are House of Leaves is one of them. Or
yeah,
like
because the book and that album were made at the same time, so they kind of fed into each other.
Have you heard any of that?
No, I have not.
The album is called Haunted, yes. In case you want to go out there and look for it.
I am mildly interested in hearing it. Because I just want to see what the deal is.
Yeah, I understand that.
Danny Lewski kind of subtly put Poe and her work into the story. And if you have the hardcover, you might notice some hexadecimal code. There's a zoom in.
Okay.
For viewers.
It's a lot of hexadecimal.
Yeah. If you put that into a program, I forgot the name off the top of my head, you'll hear a 2-second clip from one of her songs.
It does not sound like that would be worth it. Because it's like 2 pages of solid code.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you got a lot of time.
Yeah.
All right. So now I've read some reviews of the book.
Yes.
Or snippets of reviews of the book, because I guess I'm lazy. But one of them was talking about Daniel Lewski's achievement, impressive erudition to recover the mythological and psychological origins of horror, and then enlisting a full array of avant-garde literary techniques to reinvigorate a genre long abandoned to hacks. Or what is kind of my favorite is from Emily Barton of The Village Voice, who wrote, "Daniel Lewski's bloated and bollocks first novel certainly attempts to pass itself off as an ambitious work. The question for each reader is if the payoff makes the effort of slogging through the endless posturing worthwhile." So here's my question. Is it worthwhile?
I would say yes and no. Yes, if you focus on... Personally, I would say it's worth reading just for the Navidson record layer. You can completely ignore Johnny Truant if you really wanted to and have a good time. Otherwise, I think that the Johnny Truant part provides an unnecessary intrusion. And the Zampano explanations of things can go on a bit too long.
Okay. So... Now that you've read, I know that he has continued to write.
Yeah.
Do you have any desire to read anything else he's written?
Not really, especially after reading what he does with his books. He really likes playing around with odd formatting and colors and fonts. Like, Only Revolutions. It's written like a palindrome. You can start from either cover. And it apparently gives you, I don't remember if it's like 2 different stories or 2 viewpoints of the same story. Like it's maybe a road trip. I don't really know. But it's also written in this poetic style that makes it really impenetrable for a lot of people, even hardcore Danny Liske fans. He wrote five books in a what he planned is a 27 book series called The Familiar, wow. which is written exactly like a TV show, including ads. Like, he actually wrote ads.
Okay.
And they are exactly 880 pages, and it dog ears the corners of the pages by a color depending on the narrator.
Wow.
And there's like eight different narrators or something. There is the 50-year sword, which is, from what I read, kind of the most straightforward of his books.
Yeah.
But it's written like five children talking over each other. And they are marked only by differently colored quotation marks.
Wow.
But there is actually a more coherent narrative.
Okay.
As five children. I guess by comparison.
Yeah.
And related to The Familiar, he most recently put out a book called The Little Blue Kite, he wrote because he had recently become a father, and I guess that changed his perspective on things.
It does.
So it's his attempt at writing a children's book,
okay.
but it still follows his weird formatting because you can read it three different ways. Like, just follow the rainbow text, just follow the rainbowed and haloed text, or just read all the text.
Wow.
Okay. And I've read mixed responses to that.
Okay. And there was talk of adapting House of Leaves into like a TV series or.
Yeah, with Netflix. Right. That fell through for whatever reason.
Okay.
There are four scripts from that you can read, but you have to pay to read them.
Oh.
And I don't want to do that.
Okay. So
personally, I think I've given Danny Liske kind of enough of my time. Like, he also wrote a companion. He also released a companion book to this called The Whalestow Letters, which reprints The Whalestow Letters from the back of this book. And also adds a few more.
Wow. Okay. So I guess are you going to recommend that book then?
It's kind of a, eh.
All right.
Like a maybe. I wouldn't be able to tell you if you would tell someone watching or listening to this if they would like it or not. But from my own personal experience, I would only recommend reading it for the Lavison record layer, and even then maybe borrow it from a library or something.
Okay. All right. So, you mentioned that this was prompted by a video game.
Yeah.
Which you reviewed today on the blog.
Yes, at the time of this.
Which is called?
The Beginner's Guide.
The blog
is Trophy Unlocked. The game was The Beginner's Guide.
Right. And then you're going to tomorrow, which would be Saturday.
Yeah.
Publish the review of.
Yeah. House of Leaves. I actually wrote it kind of in the formatting of House of Leaves.
Okay. And that's the first book review that we're doing here, but also the first book review on the blog.
Yeah.
Right. Which is mostly movies and video games.
Yeah.
Right. So he made an impression. I have to give him credit for that.
Yeah, I admire his ambition because it took him 10 years to write this.
Wow.
Writing 10 hours a day. But I think he needed to be reined in a little by either his sister or by any of the editors.
All right. So.
I would also tell you that The Beginner's Guide is a... probably better way to get the exact same experience
okay.
as House of Leaves. So I would recommend playing that.
Okay.
So I guess that covers it.
All right.
Before we sign off, we'd like to, if you've listened or watched this far,
right.
give a quick update on the Power Square newsletter.
Right. We had been doing a weekly newsletter once a month. It was called The Hound Dogs Howl. And then in the weeks in between, we published it on a Sunday. In the weeks in between, it was called The Bark, which was a kind of a slightly smaller version of it.
Yeah. Yeah, because a bark is shorter than a howl.
And it was supposed to be kind of a, you know, quick thing.
Yeah.
So we had a discussion with a guy about marketing, and he suggested that maybe we just cut it back to once a month.
Yeah.
So we're going to be doing the Hound Dogs Howl once a month, every the first Sunday of the month.
Exclusively.
And the bark has not gone away totally. If we have a reason, like we ever actually get to do a signing or we have something being released, we'll use the bark as a way of getting that message out. Yeah. If you're on our mailing list, and you can enroll on the mailing list by going to powersquarecomicbook.com/SRCC for San Ramiro Community College, which is the setting of our story.
Yeah.
And you can then enroll at the school and be added to the newsletter and get the first issue digitally free.
Yeah.
So, and that way you're up to date on everything Power Squared.
That's right.
All right.
So if you are watching this on YouTube, if you liked this, leave a like, subscribe if you want to see more, and ring the notification bell if you want to see exactly when these videos go up. And if you have any different opinions on House of Leaves, we'd like to hear so in the comments.
Right. All right. So until next time, I'm David Hankins.
And I'm Paul Hankins.
And this has been On the Air with Power Squared.